all this stuff is about, something, just put together $5 or $10 and send it in, because someday the mics might not be hot and we're going to lose a blessing that we have been given, something you guys are putting together, something that's just,
this is a top to a, you know, what we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see,
yeah,
the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board, 11, oh, 11,
and most of
11,
the
and then
amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes are going to be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up,
yeah,
all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is, if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Welcome to Conversation Radio's Lean, Mean, and Green Show, right here on the Horn. It's Foxed Up with John Fox, where we turn the conversation to conservation. Foxed Up is brought to you by B1 Louder Productions in Sydney, Australia, and CityNet, citynet.net. B1 Louder by ringing 877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 877-443-2366, or use your free minutes by dialing direct 304-658-5453. Yeah. Your host, the ranting, head-banging hippie, John Fox.
Hey, everybody, welcome aboard the very first Foxed Up Out of the Rank for 2008. And before we do anything else, I have to just mention the fact that the network has a sponsor that I am just so proud to just be able to have, I don't know, given a mention over the past months, but Coal River Mountain Watch has decided to come to the party, and I think it's a wonderful thing because the work that they do is just fantastic, and you'll be hearing all the shows will end up having their intros reworked and all that kind of thing, and we're going to do some production of some ads and things for Coal River Mountain Watch, because this is something that's so close to the hearts of so many of our listeners, and it's amazing. Just yesterday, I had a couple of conversations with friends of mine over here, and I've asked them if they have ever heard of mountaintop removal mining, and when I tell them what it is, you know, one guy on the phone, you could just hear the shock and the silence. And he's like, they're allowed to do that? And I go, yeah, it's pretty much legally protected. And if the coal's underneath your property, it's theirs, baby. And if they want it, they can just ship you off and just be like, you know, you lose, buddy. It's our coal. And so I'm really interested in this, in the film that's coming out on Saturday. And I'm hoping that maybe very possibly we might be able to get a copy sent down to Australia, and I'll have some viewing parties down here. In fact, maybe I'll see about getting it to Democrats abroad for a meeting. Maybe we'll have film night over there. I haven't been to a meeting there in a while, but anyway. And since I've been gone for the last couple of weeks, I decided to take the holiday here. Gail had a couple of weeks off work, and I just figured, I only get this opportunity once a year to have her all to myself, so I did. And so, yeah, I had a great break, you know. I and you know, thank God that silly season is over. Why did I say thank God? I don't believe in one. But that's a whole other thing. I think I'm going to... I've been just trying to decide where I'm gonna start. And I've actually got a... Before I get into all the heavy stuff, I'm going to do something slightly more fun. Since we've been off for a while, and, I've received a few emails recently about, you know, I haven't done a track of the day in ages, and, well, I have one today. But I got to tell you the story of how I got to this track. Now, this is a track I hadn't heard in at least 15 years. And before I even mention the band or anything, because this is going to come way out of left field for a bunch of people, it all started, I think it was about a week ago. Gail and I were searching the late night television, and there was a movie that was going to be on. It was a Sinbad movie, and Gail wondered if it was a Ray Harryhausen film. And I don't know if you're familiar with Ray Harryhausen. He's a great animator. And if you're not familiar, you'll remember a film back in, I think it was like 80-something, called Clash of the Titans. And most of it was stop-motion animation. Well, that's Ray Harryhausen. And he's a genius animator. And a lot of the stuff that he did, he's amazing at doing skeletons, you know, fighting skeletons and stuff. You know, he did lots of gothic things and did some Sinbad stories and other things. So we come to find out that the film that's coming on isn't actually a Ray Harryhausen flick, but that didn't matter anymore. Gail went searching for Harryhausen videos on YouTube. And I hadn't quite made the connection between Harryhausen and Clash of the Titans, which happens to be one of my favorite movies. Cheesy as it is, the animation is just amazing. And so she comes across this video on YouTube, and someone's done an edit of a bunch of scenes from Clash of the Titans and another one of his famous films that the title is lost to me at the moment. And you know, it was a little, you know, tribute to Harryhausen. Someone's obviously a big fan. And so she starts playing this video, and I hear this guitar part come in. And it was like someone reached into my brain and opened up a manhole cover that had been welded shut for almost 20 years. And I hear this riff, and I look at Gail, I'm going, I know this. And it took me a minute. And then all of a sudden I realized it was a band that I haven't thought about in years. And this shows this goes back to my headbanger roots. You know, I love all music, but in the end, it was kind of like the Beatles and heavy metal, just and big band jazz. Don't ask me, that's what I was into. And being a New York tri-state area Jersey boy, the local thrash heroes was a band called Anthrax. And so the track on this Harryhausen video was a song that they did basically based on Clash of the Titans. And it's called Medusa. Well, that's not the track we're playing today. I told you that story to tell you about this. So I started doing some hunting. I was like, going, wow, I haven't thought about these guys in ages, you know, and I kind of a bit outgrown some of this really, really fast, thrashy stuff. But I went back and started looking, and went, you know what? Another example of how I reckon back when I was, you know, a teenager and whatnot, in the 80s, it was the metalheads that were the peaceniks of the area, of the era, you know? It's big, loud, bombastic, fast, thrashy music. But the lyrics usually dealt with other things, you know, and so, you know, I've played before on the program Revelation Mother Earth from Ozzy Osbourne, you know, all about us killing our planet, and, you know, Crazy Train, you know, the invisible hands that run the system, and all these, and so this reminded me again, and one of my favorite tracks from these guys is a track called Indians, and I'm going to read the lyric because it, some of it goes by a little fast, and you might miss it, but, and when I went to the Anthrax website, surprise, surprise, actually no surprise at all, one of the links at the top of the page says, activism. And what is Anthrax's cause? To stop that horrible use of that vaccine for anthrax on the soldiers, the one that drives them crazy. You know, where they talked about Injection Day was Crazy Tuesday or something like that. So, you know, these guys are still going. You know, I lost touch with them ages ago. I mean, I met the band, geez, sometime in, I don't know, it might have been about 1992 or something. They were playing in Texas, and I was mixing a band that was in an opening slot, and great bunch of guys. But, you know, aside from, you know, the music itself, I think there was message in a lot of this. And this track, Indians, just kind of is a great example of it. And musically, it, if you listen closely, I know it's big, it's heavy, and all this kind of thing, but if you listen closely, the rhythms are all really pulled from Native American rhythms. And I got a really good friend in this country who talked about this song once, ages ago, and he said there's this war dance break in the middle, which is just loads of fun. And he said, man, he said that just feels, and this guy's 100% Cherokee, he goes, that feels like a war dance. And so, very simple lyric, but it makes a social statement, and you just can't, and you wonder why, there's no wonder why artists are attacked for speaking out. And it's very simple. We all see black and white when it comes to someone else's fight. No one ever gets involved. Apathy can never solve. Forced out, brave and mighty. Stolen land, they can't fight it. Hold on to pride and tradition, even though they know how much their lives are really missing. We were dissing them. On reservations, a hopeless situation. Respect is something that you earn. Our Indian brothers getting burned. Original American turned into second-class citizen. And it's just cry for the Indians. And it's, I know this is going to, it's going to rattle your computers, but I had to go here. It's like a demon. And I've gone and listened to a couple of the albums. I went and found them, and, you know, I probably wouldn't get back into listening to this every day, but it still, I don't know, still gives me a charge. So, without further ado, Bob, go ahead and run Anthrax, Indians from 1987. We'll be right back. hope you all survived that. But even Betsy popped up in my Gmail chat going, I remember these guys, not necessarily my kind of music, but had friends that were into them. And you know, it was funny, at the time when that whole kind of thrash thing was happening, you know, Metallica was kind of leading LA, and they were the LA boys, so the Anthrax boys were our boys, and they were a bit more on, they were, I don't know, a little bit more silly and fun, I don't know, they were a bit goofy, they there's always been this big deal always made of the Run DMC and Aerosmith collaboration on Walk This Way, that it was the big hip-hop and hard rock meet. Well, before that, Anthrax did a rap tune, and then they started doing stuff, and still do to this day from what I've read, stuff with Public Enemy. They've done collaborations together. So, and I don't know if I've ever heard any of that stuff. I'm trying to imagine, you know, that mixed in with Fear of a Black Planet. And the other thing that was kind of cool about the band, they were huge Stephen King fans, and the name of that album was called Among the Living, and the title track is actually based, and it's a synopsis of The Stand. And I don't know if any of you have who ever read The Stand. It's something like 1,400 pages, from memory. I read it. And, you know, they do the whole thing, I'm the walking dude. And I was listening to that, and I was sitting there going, geez, kind of makes me think of George W. Bush. I'm the walking dude. I can see all the world. Control your mind with fear. But anyway, enough of that silliness. I had to get that out of my system. I know I've been driving Gail nuts with it for days. And we've added one Anthrax bumper into the mix. There's a song off the first album called Madhouse. And I reckon Greg Palast, if they ever do a documentary of his book, Armed Madhouse, they should use it for the end credits. But that's just me. Yeah, Lottie mentioning about The Stand. Yeah, it's an amazing book. I mean, I devoured it, and that was at a time that I wasn't, you know, I was busy doing so much music, I didn't read all that much, but I'll tell you, that was... The Stand, and the other Stephen King that I really, really love, that Anthrax also did a musical version of, is Different Seasons, which is just four short stories. One of them became the film Stand By Me, and there's another one that they turned into a track called Skeletons in the Closet, and that's about this crazy ex-Nazi guy and a kid who decides that he wants to become his mini-me. It's bizarre, and it's not very long, but it is just absolutely one of the most gripping and terrifying short stories I've ever read in my life. But anyway, moving on. Where am I going? Because Bob and I talked about this Futures thing on the horn section, and this is the kind of stuff that really worries me, you know. We talk about free markets, but yet we have people being able to play, like, betting games on the future of free markets. So if you're putting odds on how things are going to go and then investing money in that, don't you think that that's going to actually drive how these things are going to move? I mean, we're already headed, you know, I mean, we're already headed into the situation where oil is going to become too expensive to be viable. I mean, we're already starting to push that point, you know, and we can't actually get any more of it out of the ground any faster than we are right now, and it's just going to continue to dry up. So, $200 a barrel for oil, that happens. I think we will start to see... you know, maybe biomass and some suddenly state governments and things coming up with plans for solar geothermal systems and whatnot, which, you know, there's already one solar company who's doing the wafer cells, who reckon they're pretty damn close to being able to do solar cheaper than coal. So it's only financial interest now that's going to keep these things from happening. And as the supplies of coal and oil continue to kind of run dry, especially oil, it's only going to end up making, you know, these people in control of these resources far more rich. But they're not going to be able to supply the planet with the energy that they need. So other things will have to come in. Europe's so far ahead of the game. You know, I mean, it's just like unbelievably so far ahead of the game. I think 2008, I don't necessarily know if this is a prediction. I think it's more of just a vibe. I think we're going to see some moves on alternative energy, even in the United States, over the next year. And it's not in the United States, it's not going to come from government. It's going to come from moves like what Google has done with their pledge of solar cheaper than coal. And actually, you know, because Google, their entire system runs on energy. So they're looking ahead, saying there's going to be a point where we're not going to be able to, under the current system, be able to afford to buy the power to run our servers. So without power to run their servers, Google becomes nothing but a hollow box. So looking forward and planning on trying to keep their business actually afloat, they're making the investment now so that they can create their own energy. So, you know, I mean, I think we're going to continue to see, especially watch, we start hitting $150, $170 bucks a barrel. Watch all these people start coming out of the woodwork sitting there going, hey, you know what, that biomass thing's starting to sound like a really good idea. I pump out a bunch of turds every day. Maybe we should use them. I don't know if you've actually heard. I believe it's in Spain. People are just dumping trash in the streets because they have run out of landfill space. Flat out. There is no more landfill space. So the garbage trucks are just parked because they got nowhere to take it. So, you know, biomass power, anybody? Utilize it. Turn it into energy. Start processing some of it. You know, maybe start gaining some of your landfills back. You know, this is where Germany's been really smart. They kind of figured it out a long time ago. When I was living there, their recycling was, like, so kind of stringent. And the fact that when you went and bought your soda pop, you paid for deposit bottles. And if you didn't buy deposit bottles and you bought disposable bottles, you paid more. Really, really, really simple. You know, you paid more because you weren't bringing the bottles back. And so, you know, when you went shopping, you headed back down with your crates of empties. They gave you a little ticket for how many you checked in, and then you weren't charged for those bottles on the way out. And trash is picked up once every 2 weeks, I think. And I'm telling you, I've never produced less waste in my life than when I lived there. Because the manufacturers handled the packaging responsibly. They use lots of Tetra Pak. Tetra Pak can be 100% reused. There's no loss. They're able to break it back down into its layers, back into raw material, and recreate it again. So all that stuff would go back, and they've got a very close system because they've got a small country that still had a whole bunch of green space, but they saw landfill and did the math and saw that they would, if they didn't do something serious, was going to end up taking over some of the, you know, nice places that they still had. It's always really, you know, it just seems so obvious. And then you add on things like bicycle lanes on every road and no traffic areas in the middle of cities and, you know, all these things. And then actually we're going to get into something about traffic and pollution in cities here in a little bit. But I think we're going to end up in a situation where as the profiteering begins to really take hold, even worse than it is now, by the petrol and coal companies, especially as petrol starts to run short, we're going to see a lot of businesses that aren't as forward-thinking as Google and others, not the only one, who will look at micro generation. And this is something that I've talked with people about very often. You know, people, you know, make claims that certain types of green generation aren't viable and this and that and the other thing and blah, 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 blah. Well, first of all, it's not really true. It's not really true anymore. But if all new construction had to have solar panels, feed the grid, have every single home in new communities generating power, clean power,
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Are you still looking for weapons of mass destruction? Concerned about the future of the Supreme Court? You want to know how government bureaucrats are changing Social Security, overtime pay, or the environment? Maybe you just want to know if the president's lying to you, or when our troops in Iraq can finally come home. I'm Mark Levine. I've got the inside scoop. When you want to know what's going on inside the Beltway, you need a Beltway insider. Someone who's worked in the government and still has sources willing to give you all the news from Washington the government does not want you to know. So for lively debate, reasoned opinion, detailed analysis of history and policy, or just a point of view you don't hear expressed in the mainstream media, tune in to the Inside Scoop. Feel free to call in too. Agree or disagree. All opinions are welcome. It just might make you think. That's the Inside Scoop, weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 1 Central, 11 o'clock Pacific, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Howdy, this is Baxter Black. And if you're like me, you're concerned that the environment we enjoy today may not be around for our children and grandchildren. All the new technology in the world can't create more sky over our heads or new oceans. The Earth's natural resources, fresh water, land, and even the air we breathe are limited. Voluntary family planning improves the health of women and their children. It also helps slow population growth, which is good for our planet. So help ensure that people everywhere have access to the information and services they need to plan their families and help build a healthy future for us all. Population Action International is working to promote voluntary family planning around the world. Visit us at www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer presents Clash of the Titans. The good, the evil, the danger, the daring.
How may a mortal man face and defeat the Kraken?
Clash of the Titans. The combat, the courage, the splendor, the spectacle.
Technical madhouse over here. I love the Clash of the Titans ad. Where did you find that? How funny is that? I bet Gail loved hearing that at work. She'd crack up. Anyway, sorry about that, folks. That's what I get for forgetting to turn one connection off while running on another one. I think my two, the wireless and the wired, I think got confused. I don't know. Tried to inhale through their arse or something. But anyway, to get to the most important story of the day, a first ever study. Got to get my glasses back on. 40 coming up quick. The eyes are going. Anyway, seriously, if you're pregnant, don't live in the city. It's pretty simple. Fetuses exposed to high levels of air pollution, such as traffic fumes, are significantly smaller and can have lower intelligence and more cardiovascular problems than babies in country areas, a world first study has found. This is the first time. well, you know, this is Bob. Bob's giving me crap for saying that, bitching about the 40s coming up. Anyway, researchers in Brisbane studied ultrasound scans for more than 15,000 fetuses during a 10-year period and found that women living in postcodes with high levels of sulfur dioxide, nitrogen dioxide, and particulate matter in the air had babies with shorter femur bones and a smaller head and abdominal circumferences. Nitrogen dioxide is usually produced by kerosene heaters, unvented gas stoves, heaters, and passive smoking, while sulfur dioxide comes from diesel-powered vehicles and some industrial processes, such as fertilizer manufacturing, aluminum smelting, and steel making. Particulate matter is found in car exhaust fumes. A senior research fellow at the Queensland University of Technology and co-author of the study, Adrian Barnett, said yesterday the research was the first of its kind to use ultrasound measurement as a direct estimate of growth rather than birth weight as a delayed measure of growth. He said only fetuses between 13 and 26 weeks gestation in women who lived within 2 kilometers of pollution monitoring station were included in the study, published in the International Journal Environmental Health Perspectives. When analyzing scans from women at different distances to monitoring sites, we found that there was a negative relationship between pollutants such as sulfur dioxide found in diesel emissions and ultrasound measurement, Dr. Barnett said. If the pollution levels were high, the size of the fetus decreased significantly. You know, all these, pro-lifer twats. How about doing something about the damn environment if you really love children so much? Or is it just once they're, like, conceived, that's, you know, just, it's whatever it is? Dr. Barnett said, with research showing that bigger babies were healthier in childhood and adulthood, fetus size during pregnancy was important. Birth weight is a major predictor of later health. For example, bigger babies have been shown to have higher IQs in childhood and lower risk of cardiovascular disease in adulthood. What happens when you're a fetus can have a major implication for the rest of your life. Dr. Barnett said it was wise for pregnant women to reduce their exposure to air pollution by not walking along busy roads, not riding motor scooters or motorcycles, and limiting the time spent waiting in traffic. On a practical level, it can be difficult to reduce your exposure to air pollution, but the less exposure a pregnant woman has, the better off their baby will be. You know, I mean, come on. You know, okay, you're all pro-life. You really want to help kids? Clean this bloody planet up. Stop. And I have no other way to word this. We got to stop shitting in the nest. I mean, I know it's blunt, but I mean that's what we've been doing since the beginning of the Industrial Revolution. Which, when you look at what it has done to our planet, to our health, I still stand that it's an abject failure. You know, all this growth and all this production and all this stuff, to what end? And we continue to do it. You know, my good mate, Mr. B1 Louder, Scott Barry, was over here last night, stopped by. Surprised to see him this time of year. This is the silly season for people who go and do tours. But he says, oh, I have to run out to the car. He says, I have to get my laptop because there's a widget you'll want. And so he goes, and it's a Mac, and he says, and because of this widget, you'll just want to go on Mac just so you can have this widget. Now, Scott constantly is telling me, you know, he goes, don't worry about all this stuff. There's only 4 years left because of the Mayan calendar. And so now on his Mac, he has this little widget, which is a countdown Mayan calendar on how long we actually have left. And, you know, think about it. We only really have, you know, if you believe in this stuff, we only really have one more election to worry about. But, you know, and I sometimes wonder, you know, how many of the people making, like, real decisions in this stuff are either, you know, those kind of wacko Christians that want to bring on the apocalypse because they think it's going to bring Jeebus back around, or, you know, it's people who are into the Mayan calendar thing who just think, you know, screw it, just do whatever because it's all going to be over. But I don't like to think that way. I'd like to think a little bit more, well, you know, if that isn't true, we're going to have to live here, so hey, why don't we just start cleaning up our damn act. And I think this study is really important, and I bet you won't hear anything about this in the United States, will you? It's the first study of its kind, and it sounds like it was very well controlled. The fact that, you know, they limited the distance from a monitoring station, and for the first time using ultrasound to actually monitor the growth rates. And Bob's saying here, there's one problem with the Mayan countdown. Our own calendar has a four-year discrepancy. As such, the magic moment may be this December. Yeah, I've heard that one too. But then again, you know, like I said, this is just one of those funny things that, you know, Scott always comes by, you know, and will always say, don't worry about it because it's all going to be over. And I just, you know, you got to have a laugh. So, and I won't tell you how he said you get rid of a migraine headache. Anyway. So where am I going? But, you know, these are the, like, how much, you know, evidence do you need, you know, that, okay, even if you don't buy into the global warming argument, we're making a mess of things. It's making us ill. We clean it up. Healthcare costs will drop. This stuff isn't hard. And over at the Daily Green, thank you, Gene, for this one. The carbon cycle isn't the only thing affecting, you know, our climate. And over here at the Daily Green, there's links to all this stuff at today's show post. That carbon isn't the only cycle out of whack, and there's over 400 coastal zones that are kind of dying. And they say here, the world is getting familiar with the carbon cycle and how pumping carbon that's been buried for millions of years into the atmosphere causes some global problems. Well, get ready to learn about nitrogen. Like carbon, the nitrogen cycle is all out of whack. In this case, the origins are smaller. Instead of burning petroleum or coal, nitrogen comes from natural gas transformed into ammonia fertilizer and used to grow crops. Okay, this is sounding like it's going to be a setup for more organic farming. What doesn't absorb into the soil runs off into streams, which flow into rivers, which flow into the ocean, where the fuels dead zones, areas where nitrogen and phosphorus fertilizers so much algae growth that absorbs enough oxygen to make the water inhabitable to fish and other marine life. Jellyfish are about the only thing that thrives in these conditions. Corals certainly do not, and our coral reef has already been declared on its deathbed here in Australia, and so are most of them. There are other causes for dead zones. Human sewage, inadequately treated, is another, as is the fallout from burning fossil fuels and certain industrial processes. Dead zones, which start as eutrophic zones, that is, over-rich with fertilizers, and end up as hypoxic areas, that is, short of oxygen, often shrink and grow with the seasons. The World Resources Institute recently mapped the world's dead zones and found a whopping 415 zones, including 169 that are known to be hypoxic and another 169 that probably are. The researchers believe the number is much higher, since only the United States and the European Union do an adequate job of counting and reporting problem coastal areas. China and other fast-growing Asian economies are likely polluting their coasts, but the problem hasn't been documented, the researchers say. And there's a map here, and there's a lot more information. That, you know, it's not just carbon. Carbon has just been, you know, kind of the big flag that everybody gets to wave, because it's this thing that you can, you know, something to focus on. But, I've just been told that we got Alan the Trucker on the phone. How you going, Alan? Welcome to the program.
Hello. Got a good show.
How you going?
Pretty good. Hey, I got a question about the biodiesel, crops being grown for biodiesel. I read an article the other day about biodiesel won't be the answer because it'd be taken away from food. But it's hard for me to understand that because most of the crops I see being grown is for cattle, which is kind of like a byproduct of food.
Well, this is the thing. Like, you look in like a state like Iowa, where ethanol's really got a bit of a foot in. The strain of corn that you grow for ethanol is different than you grow for food. And with us constantly losing viable, you know, land to actually grow food, when you start to have a crop like corn competing for space, whether it's going to be, you know, whether it's going to be planted for fuel or whether it's going to be planted for food, and the fuel version makes a lot more money, it ends up getting a much higher price. So if you're a corn farmer and you have, you know, one client that says, I want you to grow corn for, you know, my, you know, vegetable distribution outfit for the grocery stores, but then the biodiesel company says, actually, we want you to grow corn for us, and we're going to pay you, you know, 75% more. And you then have fuel competing with food for the same pasture land. And we're already going to be running into problems as water starts to run short and weather patterns shift, where we're going to run into less and less space where we can actually grow food, and we're going to struggle. There's going to be crop failures. I mean, it's something that we've been experiencing here in Australia for the last few years, man. You know, it gets really dry and it's going to fail. So if you're already having problems with the system at its core and you end up putting this high profit margin in that competes against the food need, I have real problems with ethanol. Personally, not biodiesel in general, because I think you can get biodiesel from other things. I think it has. I don't like this idea of growing corn for it. If you follow me,
it seems like it's a big waste to raise corn for cattle. It seems like that. I guess we could say we eat way too much beef. I guess a lot of people wouldn't want me to say that, but it'd be more profit. It make a lot more sense to grow crops just to eat the crops instead.
Absolutely. The amount of energy that it takes to produce, you know, a pound of beef and the amount of water would do your head in. It's just amazing. And so, yeah, we waste a lot of energy trying to produce, you know, in cattle production. And, you know, you also have to look at things like, you know, McDonald's goes and clears bloody tropical rainforest just so that they can raise more cheap beef for crappy burgers in America.
Uh-huh. I know, it sounds crazy. I forgot what I was going to say. But it seems like there's a lot of food can be grown just off the smoke. couple of acres of land. And also, the biodiesel, another solution is just to cut back on the use. I hear that over in Europe now they have biodiesel vehicles that's getting like 70 miles a gallon.
Oh, yeah. And actually, something that that might really interest you, Alan, a guy that used to head up a thing here in Australia called the Strathfield Group, and I believe he's now based in the United States, has developed this system for standard diesel and, you know, gas-powered motors, you know, cars. And what it's rather amazing. What there are is and it costs like $400 or $300 for a four-cylinder engine and something like $500 for the kit for a six or an eight. And there are a handful of ceramic sensors that you actually drop straight into the fuel tank. And there's another device that gets attached onto the air filter. And the tests have shown, and this has been backed up by the CAFE standards testing outfit in California, that without any modification to the vehicle and utilizing these little devices, they can cut the diesel or petrol use by 20 to 25% and reduce greenhouse emissions by 28% by just installing this little device.
That sounds great. I have two diesel four-wheelers. Be helpful to me. I have one in my motorhome.
And what the people from the California Testing Authority said, look, if you spend $50 a week for fuel, that comes out to be $2,600 a year. If you are able to save 25% of that, you will have paid for the device itself in less than a year, and they have something like a 5-year lifespan before they need replacing.
It's called Strathfield?
Well, he used to run an outfit called the Strathfield Group. I can't remember his name at the moment. I'll have to hunt the story up again. I think it was in The Age last week. And they're going to start selling them here in Australia. They've already been selling them in a couple of states in Australia as, I guess, like, you know, a limited test. And it's been showing great promise. So, there are innovations coming about where we can actually, you know, make some difference at reasonable cost. You know, if I still owned a car, I think the first $400 I had, I think I'd be going getting one of these kits, considering the fact that it takes like virtually no installation, and I have no concept of on what it does or how it works, but the testing has shown that it's doing what it says it does. And so, again, it also proves that we could have tougher standards. You know, the arguments that, you know.
Yeah, I keep hearing that energy conservation, like you're talking about, is just as important as alternative energies.
Absolutely. There's only so much of what we're using now left, so we need to try and conserve what we're using now and use it as smart as we can to develop the new technologies that will carry us forward. A really great book that if you've not read it that I would recommend is Tom Hartman's The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, because it's a fantastic book. It really is. The first third is really hard to read because it's kind of the dad and it's all really kind of depressing, but it does the history, and then it does where we are, and then the last third of the book is what we really can do to make a difference, and he gets into the overpopulation issues and other things like that. But one of his reoccurring themes in the book is the idea that conservation is about utilizing intelligently the resources that we have at the moment, so that we're able to create the new technologies before the ancient sunlight is all used up.
Yeah, I also heard that he's updated that book also, since it's the first edition.
Right, I have the first edition. I might have to get the new one, but it really is a fantastic book. It's one of those books that, you know, if I needed to hand anyone a primer on the environmental cause, that would be it. Hands down, because he shows very clearly how, you know, it's the Industrial Revolution, and when we change from hunter-gatherer and kind of nomadic lifestyles, that we started using this captured, stored sunlight in whatever form. And it is that process that has, you know, and how when we lived on and powered our societies with more recent sunlight, like the trees, by, you know, knocking down some trees and using those for fuel, that is easier, more easily replenished than pulling oil or coal out of the ground.
Yeah,
and it lays it out in just a really beautiful fashion that I think is great for anyone. And I'm right up against the end of the show, Alan, so it's really good to talk to you, mate. You got to call in a little, or I got to see that you're on the line earlier.
I really love the subject, so I'll try to call back some other time because I got other questions for you.
No worries, man.